Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You may already know that the Football Ramble have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choosing when you sign up for a free 1 month trial at audible.co.uk/footballramble. So if you want Why England Lose by Simon Cooper and Stefan Szymanski, I Partridge by Alan Partridge, or The Football Men, up close with the giants of the modern game by Simon Cooper, then sign up at audible.co.uk/footballramble, or choose from a range of about 60,000 other titles. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep, whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. Go to audible.co.uk/footballramble and sign up now.
Everybody's welcome, but nobody's safe. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Football Ramble. Woo, and it's the Euros.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
So let me introduce myself. My name's Marcus, and I've got my three chums with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Chummy.
And Luke.
All right.
Oh, Euro 2012, I'm all right. Now,
on the doorstep.
We're going to start by the precipice. With me asking you three, what would you like to see happen at the European Championships of 2012? Jim.
Well, quite simply, Marcus, I would like to see some progression from England, because they've been abject at the last couple of tournaments, you know, that they've featured in. Euro 2004 was fun, but since then it's been just drab, hasn't it? So, you know, I just want to see England do better. The pressure's off a bit, you know, because everyone thinks they're just going to sort of combust on the pitch in the first game and not even sort of manage to get a team on the pitch for the next two. And I just think, yeah, please be good. That's all I want.
In a way, it's not much different from every other tournament.
No, not really. No, but when I say progression, I mean that, you know, we don't have this silly sort of brave lions attitude of let's just defend for our lives and that's good enough. You know, hopefully Hodgson will, even with the short amount of time he's had, be able to put something in place that's a bit more expansive, a bit more progressive.
I think Rupert Fry summed it up of you know, our one of our bloggers and friends summed it up quite nicely. In 2010 World Cup, he said, with England, all I want is that 10 minutes when we play good football.
Absolutely.
And you actually, for a split second, you fall into that trap and think, We could actually go quite far.
Yeah.
It's all I want is that. Yeah. You know, and he said, and I never got that in 2010.
I want them to trick me into thinking, this is it. We're good. We're good. We're one of the good teams now.
Yeah.
And they used to do that. And they'd let you down.
What a trick it was.
I almost missed the pain of glorious defeat. It's, like, it's just rubbish defeats worse.
Yeah, because it wasn't embarrassing. I think that was it.
The worst,
I guess so. And I'm used to it.
Those 10 minutes are like, that Rupert mentions, are like walking up to the top table at an event, sitting down in the wrong chair for a bit, and thinking, yeah, this is good. And then Germany comes
back.
I've arrived. Can I have my seat back?
Or like sitting on one of them deck chairs in St James's Park just by Buckingham Palace, thinking, this is brilliant. Why is no one else sitting on these?
Before the guy comes around.
Yeah. That'll be like £5 for 10 minutes or something. Pete.
I would like to see Martin Keown's furious monkey face chewing through a spurious anecdote about tournament football.
That's it.
That's very basically specific. What I wanted to say, yeah.
Okay. England have ruined him. Well, yeah, the expectations are so low, that's what we want.
Based
that's
on realism, he'd probably get the points over Jim, but that's not what we're going to base it on.
Never mind.
I'd like to see those drunken purchase you made the other night, Pete. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Not really anything to do with the Euros.
Yeah, but let me. Wait, hang on. Let me. Long term listeners will know Pete sometimes gets drunk and shops on the internet. The worst purchase he bought while drunk was a pair of TV glasses that didn't work because they weren't compatible with the glasses that he already wore.
Yes.
That was in JFK Airport, though. That wasn't on eBay.
It was drunken purchase, though.
That was a drunken purchase. Yeah. Yes.
And what did you drunkenly purchase yesterday? This is absolutely true.
Two pianos.
Were they both for yourself?
I thought one of them had a reserve on it. Turns out it didn't, so I won them both. So in many ways, I'm double
win
the winner.
Them.
I'm a winner. It's not just I won the auction. You want an auction winning? I'll win it for you.
Do you feel like a winner?
I feel like Rick Wakeman.
Yeah, it's better than Rick Waller.
It's not just you involved in this, though, Pete, is it? Because you don't drive, so.
No, yeah, so I'll ask the drivers out to Maidstone in Kent. And that's the only reason why she knows about the two pianos that I bought by accident.
Your long-suffering girlfriend.
She is furious.
Yeah. Two pianos and
so,
a beat.
Just listeners, to be...
I rent.
To be clear, the Euros is already a success for me.
Yeah.
Because
that's the best thing that's happened this summer.
Hasn't even kicked a ball. All right, Luke.
I would like to see...
Pete learn the piano, and then by the end of the Euros, he can do the theme tune.
Yeah.
Little Joanna.
I'd like to see there be some attacking football, because the way the tournament's set up, is teams seem to get it into their head, which is probably true, that it's very, very important they don't lose the first game.
Yeah.
So as a result, you tend to get the first round of games being a little bit underwhelming, because people are just terrified of not losing. In fairness, in 2008, we did get more goals the later we went on.
2008 was brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely stunning tournament.
So a bit of attacking football, and also a bit of progression on the sort of tolerance front, as in it's in Eastern Europe, let's not give people an excuse to beat Eastern Europe with a racism stick and that sort
Absolutely.
Of thing. I'll make sure, we'll, let's make sure that's
you really want the points, don't
well,
you?
That goes both ways, doesn't it, the tolerance?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Stick.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a bit, you know, saying that, I was going to say, you know, Andy Carroll getting the perfect hat trick.
Yeah.
I'd much rather attacking football and
well,
equality.
Be part of it. Andy Carroll can be part of the attacking football.
Well, he might score a header. He's got a good left foot on him. So, you know, all he needs to do is do something and with his right foot, which I've never seen him do quite
well,
yet.
Well, someone else might be able to deflect one in off it.
Yeah, maybe.
Or I'd like... a deadly partnership formed with Balotelli and Cassano.
That's brilliant. It's worth saying, though, Marcus, the majority of England's goals, if they set up and play as we expect them to, the majority of them will probably come from set pieces if we score a lot. And Andy Carroll's not...
You mean English goals?
Yeah. English goals.
They'll all be English goals.
Because we've got Carroll, we're going to get loads of English goals.
Which count for more than a normal goal.
Yeah.
They're the original goal.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing another one that we saw against Belgium, to be honest. That was a nice little...
It was a lovely one. A lovely one. Well, before we talk about that, we're going to give out the points. I'm going to give them to Luke, because if I don't, then goodness knows who will be knocking at my door.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good point.
Yeah,
thanks a lot. I'll donate to you, Pete, to make up for the pianos thing.
Yeah, that'll
pianos
save thing. Me some money.
Piano.
let's move on to England's preparation. And as you said there, Pete, England beat Belgium 1-0 in their final warm-up game before the tournament. And it was a lovely little goal.
He didn't have much time to get it out of under his feet.
I think I was very pleased with that, because the one thing I worry about Welbeck's game is his goal scoring and his finishing. He does miss a few chances,
but a lovely finish,
he took that magnificently.
Yeah,
on his weaker foot.
No
as
lack
well.
Of confidence from the youngster.
Yeah,
the thing I like about Welbeck is he seems to be able to do sort of almost every facet of forward play. You wouldn't say he's a natural finisher. He's not like a predator. He's
That's
not
right.
a big hold-up man. Mm. He's a modern foot forward. He's obviously got a lot to
Absolutely.
Improve on. But that finish was excellent. You know, it's a Messi-esque finish. You know that in a way, a little clip like that, lift it over the keeper. It opens up a whole new dimension for the striker to aim at, because normally they'll try and slot it or drill it hard and low, which is almost what, to a certain extent, what they're taught. But he showed a little bit of poise, which was good to see.
What was encouraging is that was it Gerrard that made the tackle, and they just bang pounced on them.
That's such a hallmark, and you'll know this seeing Fulham's sort of run to the Europa League final. That's such a hallmark of Hodgson teams. They look to soak it up and attack really quickly. Mm. They're not almost necessarily a traditional counter attacking side, but at the same time they're not a long ball merchant side either. They're almost like a mixture of the two.
That's right.
Quite long range passes, but quite sort of accurate.
It is more. A diagonal is a diagonal, a long ball or a long pass. You know,
but that's how we play, isn't it?
There's such a difference in modes of like defending and attacking. And as you say, there is an immediate switch, like you almost like they flick a switch in the team, and it's just changed mode.
Would you say that's why Ashley Young's so important? Because he's
utterly
speed,
I think Young will be starting behind whoever the striker ends up being. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And I imagine he'll switch to the left when Rooney comes back. I think, you know, Young is really the most creative player we have in there. It's absolutely imperative that we can find him as often as possible,
and that he can deliver, basically.
I think Hodgson's very much aware of that, and I would expect him to go Young in behind Welbeck against France. I was surprised.
I'd expect him to turn the Wi-Fi off in the hotel, because you know what Young's like. When he gets a spare minute.
Well,
you know,
excited.
We don't need to derail it further.
Webcam in Russia was it? I don't know.
But is that because you think that Welbeck will put more of a shift in pressing against France? Is that what you said?
I think that Welbeck is the type of striker that you would start, and Carroll's the type of striker you'd bring on.
Yeah, it's plan B, Carroll, to a certain extent. You don't want to start pumping balls up to high. It just doesn't make any sense.
There's nothing wrong with a plan B. Surely it's good to have another.
Of course, absolutely.
I mean, Llorente, to an extent, in 2010 World Cup, you could argue was Spain's plan B. Not that they particularly needed one in that obvious kind of sense, but he was a man who came on and it was a slightly different style. I thought, obviously terrible news for Jermaine Defoe's father died.
He's going to rejoin and back up with the squad.
I would have thought so, but his performance against Belgium was quite encouraging. He looked really hungry and lively when he
came on. Why I felt so sorry for him when I heard the news today. I mean, obviously thoughts and condolences with his family. It's dreadful news to receive at any time, obviously. But I was actually quite surprised when they said he was going to rejoin the squad again. I thought he would have pulled out completely. But all the best to him, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. But going on the Belgium game, talk about that just a little bit. Nothing at all. The Belgium had a lot of possession, didn't they? But do you think England? I mean,
rescinded it.
Yeah.
Well, initially I thought that it was a bit worrying, and I thought possibly they're going to be doing that as almost like a practice for against France, because France will have more possession than England.
Yeah.
In that game, there's no doubt about that in my mind. So in a way, it was almost another exercise in drilling them, because it's really important, especially when you've got arguably limited resources and talent that England have got, to drill them to such an extent where they're very, very hard to beat. And then what we touched on just a second ago about transitions between defence and attack as quick as you can.
And just spot that hole, because, you know, France are terrifically attacking.
Yeah.
And
when
they're sort of coming at you constantly, you know, a counter-attack might work against a team that doesn't defend so well.
Another reason I think Welbeck will start as well, because he's just so much quicker than Carroll. When you got Ashley Young and Theo Walcott in there as well, and I think Walcott will probably start on the right.
I think Walcott will start.
Purely for that injection of pace.
But then you've got the right-hand side against the left-hand
Johnson
side.
And Walcott
against Ribéry, Clichy, or Evra.
I would have thought he would go Johnson or Milner. Johnson and Milner, or Jones and Walcott. And I don't think he would want to play Jones at right back straight off the bat.
I know. I would, you know, and Milner puts a bit more of a shift in moving back.
He does.
I think if you don't put Walcott in, though, you're going to get up to Milner, and it will be perhaps quite blunt. I think you've got to have that pace in there.
Perhaps
you got to have the option for when you are counter attacking. So I would start Walcott personally.
I don't think that Mexes and Rami, who will probably start at the back for France, are as bad as a lot of people are saying they are.
No, I'm surprised, strong
and athletic, but they are susceptible. France are susceptible down the middle, in my view.
Yeah.
And then if you marry that up with the fact that Evra in the friendly against Iceland was woeful, presuming he starts, there's a chance for England to get something out of the game. They can certainly soak it up, hopefully, and put them under pressure at the back, but they've got so many frightening attacking players. Speaking of a plan
Benzema,
B, the players they can bring on, Giroud and Ben Arfa and Martin, those sort of players, they can really hurt England. Really, they really can.
And they're hungry for success.
Of course, it's
not like we're not talking about like 30-year-old players here.
And Ribéry's hitting form 3-3, 21 games unbeaten. All these stats.
Benzema's been absolutely devastating for Real Madrid. Do you see the goals he scored against Estonia? Yeah. The second one.
Yeah.
Like off his wrong ankle.
Outrageous. Wrong ankle grommet.
The one off the far post wasn't too shabby.
Yeah,
either,
no,
was
it wasn't too bad, was it?
Yeah, Ribéry scored a nice one as well.
The first games of the tournament, obviously Russia and Poland are fancy to win those. Do you fancy those two to go through from the group?
I would do, but...
I'd like to see those teams go.
Would you?
I'd like to see Poland go through.
Yeah, of course. I'd like to see Poland go through.
I think Poland have a decent chance in that group.
Yeah, I do as well.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because you look at those groups, all of them, and you think, you know, Poland, Russia, Germany, Holland, Spain, Italy, France, and maybe England.
It rarely works out like that, does it?
Exactly. And this is the glorious thing about this tournament. You look at the whole thing and you just think, flipping heck, you know, so everybody could get some. I mean, you know, if someone said, you know, if you missed the Ireland-Spain game and they went, oh, the Irish got a point, you wouldn't be, you know, it would be surprised, but it's not an outrageous thing to suggest. Yeah.
But do you think for Poland to win the opener against Greece, that'll happen?
I mean, and I hope so. You want the host to win the first
game. The annoying thing about that being the first game is that Greece are one of these teams that are really hard to break down. I hope they don't spoil it. I hope Poland get a chance. What I'd like to see is Poland to get an early goal, which brings Greece out.
Yeah.
And then you've got a game on your hands, you know.
But going back to England, Gary Cahill.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So unfortunate.
Just a little push and he's out the tournament.
Such poor behaviour by the Belgian player.
I mean, he has apologised since, but Cahill is such a shame for him, because he's, you know, the first 6 months of the season he was playing for Bolton,
fighting relegation.
Exactly. And then he goes into that Chelsea side, He's got an FA Cup winners. Oh no, he would have been cup tied. Sorry, but he
got a Champions League.
He won the Champions League. He was superb in the final. He'd be a starter for England going into his first major tournament. It's taken away.
He's adapted to life as an England player very well.
He has.
It's funny because Harry Redknapp told me that the Champions League isn't all that. Sure, he's not that bothered.
You couldn't resist, could you?
To be fair, though, I mean, out of the two players that collided, I'm glad it was Cahill.
Oh, not Joe Hart. Yeah, well, Joe Hart is absolutely crucial. And Hodgson said that
Joe Hart might have broken his jaw and not noticed, though.
I was so impressed with Joe Hart's press conference.
I saw him earlier.
He's an England captain now.
Absolutely.
You know, let alone in a few years' time. And he said about the Belgian player, was it Mertens? I forget what it was. Yeah, I think it was Mertens, wasn't it? He said, they said, you know, do you blame Mertens? You know, Gary Cahill's a big loss. And he said, and Hart is so definitive. He just said, I'm gutted for Gary Cahill. He's an important player for us. Mertens wouldn't have done it if you give him a choice. It was one of those things.
Of course, yeah.
Moment. Just move on.
No one's blamed him, which is great. You know, no one's come out and been.
Hart is fantastic. I mean, Luke and I were talking about this on the way here. That I just half expect someone to say, "Are you actually English?" Do you know what I mean? The way he conducts himself, you know, chest out on the pitch, very confident.
Winner.
He's a winner. I expect him to go, "All right, no, I was born in America. I grew up there for the first 18 years of my life, and I've just learned the accent quickly."
When he was on the pitch, when they'd won the league. He was very sort of like respectfully sort of said, "I don't necessarily want to talk to you, Jeff Shreves, but I'll talk to you a bit. Now I'm going to celebrate with my friends and my team."
Did Shreves say, "Give us an interview"? And he went, "Don't wait for me. Don't wait for me."
Speaking of Shreves, what was that RVP nonsense?
Oh yeah, I saw that.
What was that?
Robin
Van Persie was talking about tweeting about the match ball, some sort of match ball, and
some Shreves, PR thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Shreves replied, "How was Auschwitz?" A curveball.
Wow.
Really? Speaking of balls, a curveball. I'm not really sure what he was referring to.
To expect Robin Van Persie to answer that on Twitter is ambitious in the extreme.
Do you think Shreves is outside Auschwitz, like interviewing people as they come out? Just unbelievable.
But I mean, Gary Cahill, going back to him, he's the latest in a long line now. We've got so many players out. Yeah. I don't know enough about it, but I'd like to know if any other nations have got this many injuries.
Ukraine Italy are missing a lot of players.
In that position, I think we'd have a shout, to be honest. Yeah,
Ukraine have got this suspect food poisoning. I think, I'm not sure I'm really fully biased. Yeah.
Well, it's not just the injuries, though, is it? You've got to look at the situation with Michael Carrick, where he didn't want to be on the reserve list. Micah Richards didn't want to be on the reserve list. That's why he's not been picked, apparently. He threw a bit of a hissy fit about being asked to be on that.
Carrick's actually come out now and said, I'll be like to be considered for future squads.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
We need him now.
Because he said that now Hodgson's taken over, he'd be keen.
Terrible timing.
I'm just saying what he said. Don't shoot the messenger.
Dreadful. But also, Paul Scholes has presumably said that he doesn't want to be involved, or I'm sure he would have been called up in place of Frank Lampard. And of course there's a Rio Ferdinand debacle, which means he's out of the picture. It's not just injuries, we're missing players for ridiculous reasons
Let's talk about Ferdinand. And I mean, Martin Kelly's been called up because he was on the standby list. Rio Ferdinand was overlooked with a lot of dismay from many.
Well, that's why the standby list exists, you know? Exactly. It's not like he pulled him out of his backside, you know?
That's right. Although, I mean, Sol Campbell, was it fair to say he overreacted?
Sol Campbell wrote something, or I don't know if it was ghostwritten, I forget which newspaper it was for a national, and he said that, first of all, started off giving his point of view about the issue, which is perfect entitled to do. The second half of the article seemed to sort of descend into a rant about the bitterness he had towards the FA for not being picked for World Cup 2010.
Yeah.
Which was just very strange. I just thought, okay, if you do feel that way, that's fine, but you know, this is not really the issue at the moment.
Wasn't he playing for Notts County at the time?
No, he was gone back to Arsenal. Yeah, he was saying Ledley King was always injured and Jamie Carragher said he didn't fancy it. You know, why wasn't I picked? And it's kind of like,
Let it go.
Yeah.
I mean, if Marcus Speller is telling Sol Campbell he has to let it go, it is time.
Maybe I'm the one who actually needs to tell him.
You need to say to him, I've kept pretty quiet up till now. But the whole Rio Ferdinand.
Please join hearts. You'll be world beaters together.
The thing about the Ferdinand thing is, it's unfortunate for Hodgson because it's a problem that he's inherited. I don't think he's handled it brilliantly, but at the same time, he's picked a squad.
In
fairness, I'd like to have seen some leadership from the FA. I said this before, and it's maybe a controversial point of view, but if it were me, I would have, as the FA, I would have suspended Terry pending the inquiry.
Yeah.
The same way there's been things happening in Italy which are quite unsavoury in terms of match fixing, and certain players have been told they're not eligible for selection. This is sorted out. That may seem unfair to John Terry, but if you compare that to a working environment normally, if there's a problem, if there's going to be a problem with colleagues and stuff like that, which there clearly is here, then it possibly should have been suspended. But either way, whatever the decision has come
to, that's not Hodgson's decision.
No, that's what I'm saying. The leadership should have come from the FA. And all David Bernstein did in the press conference, I think it was yesterday, or the impromptu.
He was in the square, was he not?
He just said, "Oh, I'm not answering any questions about Ferdinand." And unfortunately, that's not good enough. He's not Gary Cahill. He's not Ashley Cole.
He doesn't have to go back to the hotel with everybody.
No, he's a leader. He should be showing leadership on this issue, and he's not done that.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of it, Jim? Do you think it is a footballing decision, or do you think it is because the camp would perhaps be split?
It's obviously because the camp would be split. Of course it is.
So then do you think it's a bad decision not to pick him, or do you think it's a good decision?
Well, I just think, surely, it's such a huge thing. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say, surely they can work it through. If I was in the situation Rio Ferdinand had found himself in, and like that, you know, John Terry had racially abused my brother.
Allegedly.
I think I would have difficulty sort of forgiving him over it. So it is going to cause division in the camp. I do think that Terry is clearly the one that's caused this issue, potentially, allegedly. He should be the one taking the bullet for it, really. Right. And just who's taken out of the firing line.
But then, you know,
innocent
until proved guilty. Well, that's right. But I mean, what I would say is that, I agree with Luke. He should have been suspended just simply because that's the way it works. If you happen to find yourself with the misfortune, you know, find yourself in that sort of situation, go back to your house, count your medals. You know, you've won enough to not to get unduly upset about the whole thing.
Did he not play a starring role in the final? I remember he's a kid.
Trial could have been before the Euros.
But that was
moved.
Just on that point, by the way, though, Rio Ferdinand's agent is not really shouting himself.
Hell no.
At a very basic level, there are several reasons why Roy Hodgson, for footballing reasons, if he didn't want to, wouldn't have to pick Rio Ferdinand. There are legitimate reasons to not pick him. There are also legitimate reasons to not pick John Terry. So it's a very, very thorny issue. But again, I'll reiterate, there should have been leadership shown from the FA. That's my view on that.
And at the end of the day, you know, you're not going to build your team for the next 5 years around Rio Ferdinand.
Or John Terry. Yeah,
so, you know, whoever he calls up, he kind of has to be... Well, would I rather have... I can't bring Rio Ferdinand in just because politically... And he's not even on the standby list, that's so right. I can't even do that. So it just seems weird that we're suddenly in the situation where we're going, why have we called up this Liverpool player? And, it's like, and yes, it is a bit Liverpool-heavy, and they've not had the best season, but he plays in the position where we need him football.
And also, by the way, Pete, the manager picks the team he wants to pick. The history of football is littered with players who have been very talented, who've not got the international caps maybe they deserve to get. Partly because managers didn't fancy them, partly because there were other players in their position better than them or perceived to be better than them, and partly because they can get on with other players. That's just simple as that.
I mean, going into the 2010 World Cup, wouldn't it have been the case that Podolski, Closer and Muller wouldn't have played if you were looking at form and all the rest of it? Muller ended up top scorer, joint top scorer, but he was given it. You know, obviously Closer scored a few, and Podolski played well as well.
Yeah. Well, look at how Crouch has, you know, found his way in England shirt.
Well, another... You know, one of the football reasons for not bringing Ferdinand as well, I suppose, is, as you say, Marcus, you know, those German players you're talking about, they didn't have the best club form, but Yogi Love, he's building a team there, and he has been building a team for a long, long time, and, you know, England have been doing that, and Rio Ferdinand's not been there a lot. You know, he's been injured a lot, and he's not really part of this generation of what England is. So.
He wasn't featured in the qualifiers, really. I mean,
Hodgson did make it very clear in his press conference when that's the squad, he'd like to keep faith of players that qualified.
Well, because Hodgson's got to... Again, we stressed this the other week, you know, that it's not just his team, but there are players there who have been given a chance under Capello and have been taken on by Capello. Yeah. And so there is an overlap. But let's talk about the play. I mean, you know, Hodgson, we often go on about, he's very zonal with his systems and his shapes and so on and so forth. For once, I'm actually looking at England thinking, dare I say, we've got a bit of a plan, haven't we?
If he can drill them, and they can drill themselves quickly enough and efficiently enough in time for the first game, and maybe, you know, get a clean sheet against a potent attack in France, as we said earlier, there's no reason they can't use that as a platform, certainly.
But one of the reasons why I think, you know,
but
Hodgson...
half the time it's just nice because Hodgson is not scared to explain his tactics and, yeah, why, yeah, and why he sets up his team in a certain way. You're like, you can't have Harry going, oh, well, they're a big... The best you can get out of something like Harry, or, you know, they're a big side, or, yeah, you know, we're going to have to... He never talks about specifics because, right, quite frankly, I'm not sure that Harry has a lot of that in the tank. But, like, Roy, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't patronise. He just, he's just explain.
He's refreshing as opposed to Redknapp. You're absolutely right. And also, the manager we had before, Capello, doesn't really have much time for the press and hid behind the language barrier quite a lot, which got the press's back up, which didn't make for the most open of relationships. Mm-hmm. Before that, you argue had the same problem with Sven, who, mm-hmm, they mistrusted him. McLaren was leaving McLaren aside because he didn't really stick around that long. Mm-hmm. And was also, and he ended up storming out of press conferences as well, didn't he, McLaren?
He did,
so
yeah, yeah.
It's good to have an honest, decent man who will. And we saw it with the interview with Lineker yesterday, it was. Where he was open and explained himself, as you said, Pete, explained himself pretty reasonably, you know.
An honest, decent man in an English game.
Mm. Like I say, as we said before, I fully expect to be chewed up and spat out by the end of it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's, I think it's already starting with this little sort of backlash from the Ferdinand thing. I think that will be the catalyst for it if it is to happen anytime soon. But it's interesting to think what... The landscape would be like if Capello were still in charge, because with the injuries, you know, and all the furore that's come up about so many different things, it would have been a disaster. This has been his last tournament, and it goes the way it looks like it will.
Yeah.
Do you not think with Hodgson, going back to his tactics and whatnot, the system comes first?
Yeah, of course.
And the
does,
players
yeah.
go within that. And so for a team like England, who, you know, we've got some good players, but we're not... blessed with the talents of perhaps some of the Dutch's attacking options, certainly for one. You know, if the system comes first, the idea is if someone drops out, someone should be able to go in and slot in.
Yeah.
And I find that quite comforting.
Yeah,
that there is a unit. Exactly.
But and most of those players have played in sort of continental, you know, they've played under managers that do that, and they are modern footballers, so they know what their job is if A happens or if B happens or if C happens.
They just don't tend to follow it in English shows, do they? Well, that's the big question.
One of the strange advantages of there being such little time is it's going to be, this is the plan, this is what we stick to.
Yeah.
There's not.
Yeah.
There cannot be any deviation from it. There isn't room for it.
But aren't England players known for not following instructions in that way? When the chips are down.
True, but a lot of these...
which is why we think about it. It's actually quite strange that he's focused so much on Gerrard.
Well, maybe he's trying to drill that into him.
Well, it'd be, but if you can channel Gerrard's efforts, perhaps. But a lot of these players... haven't played tournament football for England.
Mm.
I mean, who do we...
Yeah, but look at the players who have. Good.
Mm.
And they've achieved nothing. They've achieved nothing. I don't think that's irrelevant.
None of the ones that were kicking around in 94 played any tournament football.
But what I'm saying is, though, that you're saying a lot of the England players, they don't follow these instructions and so on and so forth. Yeah, we've seen that in the past, but some of these guys have not played at a tournament before, so who knows? Who knows? But, I mean, you know... Who do we think will start against England? Should we do that? You're obviously Hart in goal.
Against France, you mean?
England-France, opening game. Ashley Cole, left-back.
Yep. Yeah.
Centre-backs, Terry and Lescott, we'd say.
Yeah. I would think he'll go with Lescott because he's got a little more experience for England.
There's a point to be made about Terry and Lescott that Lescott's going to have to slot on... Lescott will slot in at left centre-back, which means Terry has played right centre-back, which he doesn't normally play.
Mm.
And I think he played right centre-back. I might be hammered on Twitter for saying this, but I'm pretty sure he played right centre back against Germany in World Cup 2010, and he was horrendously out of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a bit of a sticking point, because I know that Lescott will definitely play left centre back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got obviously Glenn Johnson at right back, who defensively is a question mark over him, so it's a bit of a weak area, I think.
Mm.
So that's where your system could fall down.
That's right.
Well, that's obviously where Ribéry and Benzema are going to be at their most.
Which is why I think he'll go for Milner.
Absolute picnic.
Terry did do some falling down during the season as well, notably with RVP.
Well, that's why I would think he would go Milner, and then obviously Parker and Gerrard to show a bit of defensive cover. Out on left, Oxlade-Chamberlain, maybe?
I don't know if he'll start him. I think you might start with Downing again for the terms of...
the unit.
For the unit and also for the experience. And as you've made the point of having a left-footed player out there.
And also, on the Downing thing, and we've been guilty of this in the past as well, giving him a bit of stick for his no assists and no goals in the league last season. He is actually, apparently, the second... biggest chance creator in the Premier League last season. The chance just weren't taken.
Had a really high sort of percentage rate of that for Villa before as well. I think that was one of the reasons.
So I can see
Downing's not as bad as people make out. He's not a world beater or anything like that, but he's not awful. And I don't think Jordan Henderson is either.
And then Young behind Welbeck.
And I think Young will switch out left when Rooney comes back in.
Yeah, it'll be good to see anyway.
I think also against Sweden. Oxlade-Chamberlain probably will start on the left, because Sweden's centre-backs, it's Jonas Olsen and Olof Mellberg. It's not exactly Pace Town, is it?
No.
So if you've got, the options of Walcott, Young and Oxlade-Chamberlain behind the main striker...
Will the Swedes defend from the front with Zlatan? Or will he not
Zlatan,
interested?
No. Zlatan, emphatically
no. In fairness though, Zlatan does play deeper for Sweden.
He does, actually.
Gets more amongst it.
Elmander could feature.
I'm not saying he's going to put in like a Tevez-like shift.
Well, I saw England-Sweden at Wembley when we won 1-0, which is the first time we'd beaten them...
In ages, yeah.
Forever, I think, you know. And Zlatan, he just didn't fancy it that time.
Sweden's record without Zlatan, is, I think, is better, isn't
I think it,
it
is, yeah. But you want the big man at the tournament.
Oh, of course, yeah. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting he shouldn't play.
But what about the Ukraine, though? As Luke said earlier, 10 members of their team have come down with food poisoning. It happened... prior to a friendly against Turkey and Germany.
You don't know how close I am to saying that old chestnut.
Well, yeah. their manager, Oleg Blokhin, said it may have been sabotage. I do not know. It cannot be accidental. Well, then you do know.
Make a decision. Don't just sort of skit around one.
I want to stick one neck on the line and say Blokhin is a terrible bloke. He had that racism thing he dropped a while back about the Ukrainian league, saying basically, I mean, effectively saying there are too many black players in the Ukrainian league, which is just outrageous, you know. And UEFA and FIFA didn't punish him or anything for that.
Was that confirmed, a racism charge in the Ukraine?
Yeah, no, but he didn't actually get charged. Everyone was
no, he didn't.
As you carry on, as you were. Yeah, it's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous.
Standard behaviour out there.
I really fear
for
you.
Hope not.
Do you know what? I really fear for Ukraine. And even if this food poisoning thing is true. It's obviously unfortunate because they can't afford to lose players anyway. They got
Shevchenko up top.
Well, they were destroyed. Destroyed by Turkey. Yeah, who didn't even qualify.
Shevchenko and Voronin were both affected by the food poisoning. They've still got time to get over it, I assume. Load of time.
Bellies.
Until Monday, I think they've got. So good luck to them. There was a going on to Group C with Spain. Apparently, there's a little bit of animosity between some of the Barca players and Madrid players. It's been suggested. Xavi pointing out recently in the press why Xavi did this. I don't know. He said that the Barca players congratulated the Madrid players after they won the league, and he said, "But you know, the opposite didn't happen when we won the league."
That is a very odd time to be bringing that little nugget out, isn't it?
Yeah, he did say that, you know, the success on the pitch with Spain overcomes any kind of individual.
Well, you were saying to me that PK and Ramos, like, famously don't get on.
Yeah, no, they don't.
I didn't know that. I thought they were quite well known, these players, for putting their differences aside for the national team.
Well, I'm sure they do. But
I don't care. If I had a team of squabbling World Cup winners,
geniuses, we just got squabblers.
I was about to say this podcast works, doesn't it? But Romario and Bebeto were a very famous example.
Yeah,
you know,
old Cole and Sheringham.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Our own example.
Yeah,
from England. But also in Group C. Big talk from Slaven Bilic.
Yeah.
Yes. an interview in The Guardian the other day came out, and he was reckoning that they can reach the final. He said, "You can call me a madman, but I think I'm just being realistic." I love it. He said, "For the last 5 years, we've been either among the top 10 teams in the world, or very close to that, according to the FIFA rankings. And those rankings are realistic because they take results into the account, not natural beauty or shirt design."
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it was shirt design, they'd win every time.
Exactly, yeah. I was about to say. But I did like it when he said, "I'm saying this because I know the character of this team. When we take off, it's an explosion."
Someone's a rock star.
Come on, Ireland, be afraid. Yeah. Bilic is coming for you.
You don't want an explosion on takeoff. That's the last thing.
I'd totally forgotten about Bilic and Croatia, and then he said that. I was like, "Oh yes!"
Well, listen, come on. Croatia play Republic of Ireland first, and that's a massive game.
Yeah, that's a huge game for both of them.
Because Ireland obviously will defend to the hilt against Spain, as anyone will. Yeah. You know, as England certainly.
Well, Ireland will defend to the hilt against everyone.
Yeah, but will they against Croatia? They'll need a result.
Yeah, true.
They need a result.
And Croatia aren't the quickest at the back either. I mean, Simic isn't the youngest, and Ciolucca, I mean, isn't the player he was either. So they've got a chance of pushing forward.
Yeah. Do you want to know what Bilic said about England's chances?
Definitely.
Well, he said about England, he said, "There's definitely some meat in that team, and they could go far." There's some meat in the team.
Travelling meat.
Officially endorsed by Bilic. I feel like we've won already.
So what do you think of Ireland's chances? Let's sort of spend a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
Right then.
It just Ireland never cease to amaze at a tournament, do they?
Yeah, well, Italy have struggled against them in the past.
They have.
Italy are struggling generally with the injuries they've had, and you know it could just be that they've lost their last three friendlies, I think it is, but they start slowly. They may have started slowly early. Who knows?
I think, but when I do look at Ireland's chances, I don't look at them so much. I look at Spain and think, come on. And then I look at Italy and I actually quite fancy Italy
On the Italy thing, they lost 3-0 to Russia, but I mean, that doesn't really tell the story. They experimented with a lot of different shape in that game.
I thought the booing was...
Oh. Yeah, strange. I think that Ireland will... I genuinely think they'll set up... I mean, he's even said that... Trapattoni's even mentioned that he might start with 5 in the midfield and just have 1 up front.
Mm. I think that's what he'll do again.
I think Trapattoni just thinks that the players aren't anywhere near as good as a lot of the other players in the tournament. Mm. So they've been preparing for the tournament, obviously, with qualification and stuff like that. And then they put Estonia to the sword in qualification, in fairness, but they're going to set up with banks, aren't they? All sorts of banks. Yeah.
Whatever happens, Robbie Keane's going to put in one hell of a shift.
Oh, that's
you know. But then, you know, could he form a partnership with Shane Long, or is that just a bit too attacking?
It depends where they are later on in games, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you think Long will start, or do you think Doyle will start?
Oh, Doyle, of course. Yeah.
I'm really excited about the Euros.
Yeah. I keep having moments like that.
I know it sounds like a horrible cliche, but I do always find myself supporting Ireland.
Of course,
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Do. They're so much more likeable than England. That's why. Gordon Bennett.
Especially now they're actually Irish as well, a lot of the time.
Yeah, true.
It's a shame Stephen Ireland's not been called up.
It really is.
Is Mr. Ireland.
Exactly, after all.
Literally.
Well, Ireland's chances then, I mean.
I think they should be, look, if you qualify for a tournament,
go for it.
I know it's all this stuff. I mean,
we're going to say go for it and all the rest of it, but with England we're like, well, stay
keep
cool,
it tight. Yeah. Yeah. I read an article in the Irish Independent a while back that said the thing about Ireland is that they don't have any expectations when they get to a tournament because they don't qualify that often.
It's a big party.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think if it's a 16-team tournament and you're in there, you can take sort of credit, you can take sort of like impetus from people like encouragement from Denmark and Greece.
Yeah. Get through the classic example.
You should at least, whoever you are, should at least be trying to get through the group.
But if they can get through the group, okay,
and play England,
then. It's a winnable game, the quarter final, because they'll have you know, England, France, Sweden, or Ukraine. Yeah. And England, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, semi final.
At least.
Yeah. They'll be disappointed if they don't get there.
Actually, I mean, I'd find myself supporting them as well. If they win it, it'd be unbearable.
Yeah.
Eamon Dunphy will have a good time.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that if England and Ireland both win their groups, in theory, they could play each other in the final.
Shut up!
I'm just saying.
England will never get there.
Half the fun's the daydreaming, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the best bit of the tournament.
When it starts, it's rubbish. When we get beaten,
it's going to be 5 goals a game.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, though, standing in Ireland's way of that quarter final, semi final, and final spot is Italy and a possible libero.
Yeah.
Well,
talk of De Rossi playing there. Apparently, he's played there for Roma. I've not seen a game of him playing there for Roma, but I'm sure that he has been there.
All over that.
De Rossi's a great player.
Yeah, he is.
Because is Bazzaglia out?
I think apparently so.
What a shame that is. It's a brilliant season.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing Chiellini, though.
Chiellini.
I'm
sure he's from Rome. He's got a massive Rome.
He's a warrior, isn't he?
Yeah. An intriguing group that'll be. But we've got to go back to Group B, where perhaps the most intriguement is of the neutral.
I thought we were just flitting around all over the place. There's no.
We're having a good
system.
Time.
There's no system. We're having a good time.
Yeah. Yogi Love has said his players.
Yogi Love
has said his players.
Yogi Love.
Yogi Love,
thank you. They are perfect hat trick. He said his players can drink, smoke, tweet, and have their wives and girlfriends visit on
the pitch.
Why is tweeting so high up that list?
I love it. It's in there with drinking and smoking, crying.
But
out
before there. Wives and girlfriends.
Or wags for sure. Yeah,
they're just so confident, it makes me sick.
I think they're just spoofing England, aren't they?
Yeah,
maybe.
What stuff don't you do? What stuff are you not allowed to do? Because we're going to do that.
All of it. We're going to all
score? You're not allowed to score? We're definitely going to do that.
What can't you be trusted to do?
Yeah.
Germany are huge favourites. Everywhere you look, people are backing them. You know.
Yeah, there seems, with regards to the Spanish, people are suggesting, you know, Villa and Puyol are going to be big misses, which they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they have that same hunger? Will they be a bit tired? All these kind of questions.
Yeah.
It's been a long season for the big two as well.
It has. Vincent Forrester wrote a very good piece about that on our on our website, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the thing with Spain is the fact that they've not got David Villa, but because he's not there to finish things off. And if you look at his goal scoring record, it's miles better than any other player in that that forward line. And then, but at the same time, they've been used to not having Villa for a while.
Mm.
Well, and then you could look at Germany's centre-back partnership.
Torres, top scorer.
Yeah,
he's gone for it.
Yeah. Well, no, you can't predict because the predictions are all sealed. We'll come on to that in a minute.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, will he go for Torres or Llorente up top? Will he go for something else?
Got form.
We're supposed to talk about Group B. We're all over the place.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm so excited. Forgive me. Let's go back then to Group B. I mean, do you think, just quickly, do you think Spain will go for Torres or Llorente up front, Pete?
I think on form, you've got to go with Llorente. Sorry.
Yeah.
I would go for Llorente, but I think he will go for Torres.
Right. There you are.
Well, what's interesting about Spain as well, obviously missing Villa and Puyol, you've got to remember, in the World Cup, you know, I know it's 2 years ago, but they won all of their knockout stage games 1-0. So they won by very narrow
Spain.
Margins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. they lost 1-0.
No, knockout stage games.
Oh, sorry.
So they won by some very, very narrow margins, and they're obviously won by very, very good players, which Villa and Puyol are. So those margins, you know,
that's a good
narrower.
Point. That's a good point.
Great point.
On the Group B thing, the Germany situation is the Mertesacker thing, where if he starts, he's not played football for a while, and he's really slow.
Mm. This is it, though. If you read a lot of the preview chat and whatnot, people say, oh, yeah, no, the Dutch are great going forward, and the Germans got these wonderful midfield players, and one thing and another, blah, 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 blah. But nobody seems to have a really good defence. No one said, oh, they're solid at the back. Mm. They are, apart from the ones who are going to park the bus. Mm. You know, there's talk of, England doing that, and
Greece
Ireland.
Greece will do that.
And Greece, the usual, well, maybe not the usual suspects, but certainly some of them. Whereas nobody's talking about Germany's back line being very good, or Holland's back line. I mean, Spain have got a decent defence.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't
defense.
Say Spain have a
true.
Bad defence.
I mean, Spain no, I possibly have the best defence in the tournament. But then, I'm intrigued to know what Italy are going to do. I mean, it's a shame, as I say, one or two injuries there.
If we lost four of our backline players, we'd be
stuffed.
Out. I don't think we'd win a match. I don't think we'd draw a match, to be honest. But if Spain lost four of theirs, I think they'd be...
They play much more of a position-based game, don't they?
Yeah, true.
To be a defender in a German team or a Spanish team which has a huge amount of possession, it's a different discipline. It's a lot about concentration.
Yeah.
When those teams come out, it's almost like being a top-level keeper. It's about concentration.
Yeah.
When you play as a defender for England or for Ireland or for Greece, with the greatest respect to those nations, fucking defending for your life.
Can you imagine Carragher?
Get your head on it.
Carragher playing in the back for Spain. So he wouldn't know what to... He wouldn't know...
Carragher and Pique.
His job is just to lash it, and obviously he's not involved now, but I'm just saying that's a very English style of defending, just lump it.
The only thing I would say on that thing as an example is if it's a system's good enough and they're drilled well enough, it can happen, because you've seen Bissingwa sitting there in Champions League finals and he's done fine. So it does work if you drill them properly. But Germany, I think, if they start with Bad Stuber and Hummels, who I think are both excellent.
Yeah,
Hummels gets a little bit of a bad press. People say
he's an excellent defender.
Yeah, people say he doesn't replicate it for Germany, but I think he's good. Yeah, I think he's decent.
It's such a shame for Denmark, because there's a good qualifying campaign and they've got a good side. And in that group, if they're in another group, you know, they could be one of the, you know, a dark horse, perhaps, you know.
Well, I wouldn't want them in England's group.
No,
because going forward, they're all right.
Big Nicholas Bender up front, Jim.
Exactly.
Bender especially, he's the star man of the tournament, isn't he?
Of the sport, pal. Yeah.
Zlatan is a poor man's
of the
Bender.
Continent, I would say. Apparently Dennis Romadell's still knocking around.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Whip it.
Is Klaus Jensen in there as well?
Yeah.
John Jensen.
He's dad.
It'll be interesting to see.
Denmark did out qualify Portugal.
Yeah, who are also in there.
Beat him in the qualifying group as well, at least once.
Who would you fancy? Do you think Denmark? I mean, we talked about it a bit last week, but Germany and Holland to go through, do you reckon?
It doesn't always go like that, does it, as we say, but I think in this case it will, because I think the Dutch have just got so much more up front than Portugal do, even with Ronaldo.
But
they're a headless peri-peri chicken, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know?
and don't forget, though, Holland and Germany could destroy each other. They hate each other so much.
Yeah.
They get so many suspensions and injuries just by playing each other. They might have a chance of winning.
I've said it again. I couldn't believe my luck when they both drew each other.
Yeah.
I love that fixture. You know, we'll have the old, you know, World War we mentioned and all this before.
It's going to be so good.
Incidentally, one of my favourite Euro goals of recent years was Van Nistelrooy's volley against Germany when they drew 1-1 in 2004, was it? Mm. Lovely stuff. Mm. So more of that, please, Huntelaar.
Yeah.
Or whoever indeed
or
plays.
What is it? I think Van Marwijk said he's not going to start Huntelaar.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think he's going to start with Van Persie right up top with Schneider behind him. people have said to me...
Could you tell us that before the predictions?
Sorry, mate.
You can suck my piano.
Yeah, good.
Dutch journalist said to me that... off the record, Schneider is he's just undroppable, and he's had a mixed season at Inter, as we know.
Yeah.
But he's not going to drop him, so he's going to play behind Van Persie, and Hendrik's going to start on the bench despite being top scorer on qualification.
He's not ready yet.
He's not ready yet. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
But
what a sub to come on, eh?
Oh,
yeah.
They've got a few, haven't they?
Dirty boys.
Dirty count. Right then. elsewhere happening in Euro news, Michel Platini has said that referees have the power to stop matches if fans are chanting racist abuse at players. As Platini put it, referees can temporarily stop the game and finally cancel the game if the racism keeps rearing its head. Mario Balotelli, of course, a few days ago said that he was going to walk off the field if it happens to him, if he gets any abuse. But Platini did say, well, hang on a minute, it's not the player who's in charge of the situation, it's the referee, and you can get booked for leaving the field of play. I think people are misunderstanding this of, oh, if you walk off for getting racist abuse, you'll get booked. No. The rule is, if you leave the field of play without permission, you do get a booking.
Go to the referee, that's why he's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. UEFA have got to come out and say... make it clear that there is policy in place just so everybody's clear on it before the tournament, because it is a potential thorny issue. So I think, fair play to Platini for coming out and making that clear.
I agree with you. Listen, extreme example, last minute of a knockout game, you win it 1-0, but you're getting battered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's to stop you telling your player that to come off if he's been abused? You've got to go for the referee, that's why he's there.
It's definitely a progression though, Pete, isn't it?
I think it's just since we inducted him into the Demon
Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Decided to pull his socks up.
Influencing the game.
I think people forget that one of the cornerstones of being a referee is ensuring the safety of the players.
Yeah.
Certainly part of it, so he's got to make sure they do it that way.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in Ukraine, this is the deputy mayor of Kiev, the city that we will be in next week.
Oh, here we go. There's a pronunciation coming on the horizon.
He's sent out a message to travelling fans.
What's
coming
his name?
To Ukraine's capital. Anatoly Holubchenko.
Very good.
He said...
It's the his middle name.
the man said?
He said, we've warned all the embassies that fans must not go bathing in the Dnipro River. Now, this is the main river running through.
I wasn't planning on that. I don't know about you guys.
Well, you say that now, Jim.
Yeah.
You're not out there with your top off.
Might
after
be
a
lovely river.
Now he's told me I can't do it. I want to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he
but Jim was in the shower.
This is the main river running through Kiev. He went on to say, and I love his presumption here, football fans will drink 300 grams, which is a third of a litre, jump in and drown, and then we'll be told our beaches aren't safe. A drowned drunk and unsafe beaches are two different things.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, they were last I checked as well.
Did he know someone was listening when he was talking?
We will drown them on the beaches.
Sounds like the sort of thing you might babble in a dream.
It sounds like the sort of thing you hear from the local drunk on the corner of the...
The mayor of Kiev.
Because he's hallucinating and he thinks he's in context.
He's speaking from experience.
Yeah.
Is the side of a river a beach? Is that what you call it? You call
not
it a bank,
normally, no. Yeah, you would call it a bank.
I mean, it could even be a veiled threat.
Oh, yeah, we will drown them in the...
drown them on the beach.
When he says football fans will drink 300 grams, it's not a choice.
I'm guaranteeing this.
On entry, get that down, yeah. You'll have a better time, trust me. I don't know. But anyway, before we talk about a few domesticals, we got to say that we've done our predictions. For the Euros, we've put them in an envelope and sealed it. Not even an envelope.
No, it's in a
little
box sealed with a shiny Euro 2012 sticker.
It's like one of those Void if remove.
The reason for that is we kept them at Pete's house, and after what Pete said earlier about me not knowing about the Dutch forward line, I'm worried he's going to open it and amend them. So I've sealed it.
I think I made it precisely clear who I have for top scorer. But never mind.
Yeah. But anyway, so when the next Euros come around, we'll see how we go.
Long-term listeners will remember I hilariously predicted England to get the semi-final of the World Cup.
So 2010.
Expect more of that idiocy.
When you said that to me before we recorded, I actually burst out laughing. Oh dear!
I think we made a couple of clangers when we were out there as well, because we didn't have access to internet or anything.
Or
so
telly.
Let's not talk
about our clangers.
we thought Spain had done like that conga through the press conference.
I seem to remember you named the show after it,
yeah.
Pete, didn't you?
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, the conga of shame.
Don't tune in when we're in
Kiev.
We're rubbish on tour.
For fear of mistakes.
We're like Interpol.
Yeah.
We're better in the studio.
But we have a bloody good time, though. Yeah. Don't we just. Let's come home to some domestic news. some domestical news where Paul Lambert is now in charge of Aston Villa. It's a shame for Norwich, isn't it?
It is, but they've got Chris Hughton in, which is, you know, he's a good manager. I think that's a really good appointment given the circumstances. And it's great for Villa as well. Because McLeish was just a parasite on that city.
I'd be delighted if I was a Villa fan. I'll tell you why, because he's progressive enough.
Yes.
But he's also firm. He also seems quite tough.
Very firm, yeah.
And he could maybe.
It's a good little combo.
Maybe get Grant Holt involved, couldn't he?
He's got a bit of money as well.
Yeah.
Darren Bent coming back fit as well under a manager like that, you know. Looks good for Villa.
Let's not forget the big key issue about Paul Lambert is
Stephen Ireland.
He simply isn't Alex McLeish. Yeah. So on that basis alone, he should be all right.
I think that's all the board really wanted.
we get all that, the promotion and stuff. Are you Alex McLeish? No. Where can you sign?
Yeah, just tugging at his face, just checking it's not a mask.
I'm so happy for Chris Hughton as well, because he deserves a crack at, you know.
You love him, don't you? And rightly so. He's a good man.
McLeish leaving Villa and Lambert then going to Villa, meaning that Hughton has gone to Norwich.
Yeah. Made football
fucked
better.
Birmingham over again. All because of Alex McLeish.
I thought you were going to say, oh, it's literally the managerial merry-go-round. Yeah.
Good point, Jim.
Yeah.
Excellent point. Brendan Rodgers has left Swansea for Liverpool. Mm.
Can't sign any Swansea players for a year, apparently.
But right? Sigurdsson might be not included in that. Isn't
he? That's a clause you don't see a lot, do you?
And not everyone
goes
raiding.
Yeah, that's true. I like that.
There probably has been a few. Mm. But Sigurdsson was never officially...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so it's okay. So,
I just wonder, is that the right time for Rodgers? Presumably they're going to, you know, give him some time, because I don't think, you know, they were talking about Guardiola and stuff like that. I'm not sure how serious that ever was.
Yeah.
But it's a big ask. It's such a difficult job to do, isn't it? I think it's the hardest top-level job there is, given how long it's been.
Do you think he's got the personnel as well to implement this style at Swansea?
We don't know who he's going to bring in, do we? I think obviously there'll be a lot of shopping.
Though.
As it stands, I can't say enough about his methods behind closed doors about how he gets stuff out of players. I think if he can get
little short passes,
but if he can get Leon Britton doing that, who's, you know, has been playing down sort of in every level of football, and if he can get him to perform to that level in the Premier League, I'm sure he can get that out of players he's got.
Is Leon Britton not more likely to take instruction?
I think Rodgers'
problem.
Rodgers commands respect. I think you see that from his teams. You see that from his players. He's clearly a very intelligent man.
But you said that about Hodgson. You know, he commanded respect before he met.
But
Hodgson, the Oikes.
Hodgson just went on his own, didn't he, or with one other?
I can't remember.
No backroom staff.
There's a lot. Listen, don't forget with Hodgson, there was a management change, a direct ownership change, that sort of thing. Yeah. It wasn't really a great place.
But
to
also with Rodgers, he's inheriting, you know, a style from Martinez to a degree as well. And obviously, Rodgers has, you know, is in that mould, and that's why he got the job at Swansea. But he's not going to be able to do it straight away, is he? So this is what I mean. He needs the time to do it.
It would be very interesting.
Is he a manager that they're going to splash money? Money to?
I think he's a cheap option, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's not his style, or certainly not been his style thus far to go out and spend loads of money anyway.
But he's not had the option before, has he?
I suppose not, no. Well, we'll wait and see, won't we? See what we have to look forward to after the Euros, I suppose.
Yeah. No. Other news from Wales, Cardiff City will have a new kit, but with a different colour next season.
They need to either abolish the playoff system or something. Just do something.
Invest a lot of money into a lobbying group to abolish the playoff system.
Get a battering ram to batter down that door.
They've got a new badge.
And a new kit.
New everything.
Yeah.
The club will move away from their traditional blue colours to a red kit with a new crest in the form of a red dragon. This is after the new Malaysian owners decided to give the team a rebrand. Not a welcome one, or perhaps not.
I love the way that Sky Sports reported on it, because at the end of their news story, which is actually quite interesting, they said, and William Hill have offered odds on that it'll be changed back before the end of the season.
Didn't
Leyton Orient famously do that? Leyton Orient changed.
Well, loads of teams have changed their kits, haven't they?
This is the colour.
No, but loads of teams have changed their kit colour before.
Have they?
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal used to play in the, I forget the exact tone of it, but they had a sort of more burgundy style when they first started. I know it's a long, long time ago.
But nowadys
it's different.
It's a different primary colour, Jim.
Leeds changed their colours as well. Leeds weren't always white. You know, but
when? Well, yeah, but when though?
No, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying it's not completely unique.
In the modern day, it is.
Are you working on behalf of the Malaysian rulership? Just tell us if you are.
Because I want in.
Actually, no, I can lie about this.
I've made some decisions in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's meant I've later had to make some sacrifices.
Come to think of it, you're wearing a new shirt today.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, the new slogan on the badge will say fire and passion, which is what you're all about, Jim, of course.
Yeah. It sounds like a corporate slogan.
Yeah.
Well, it is a corporate slogan.
I was about to say, it is.
How annoyed would you be?
Well, apparently it happens all the time, Jim. Leeds and Arsenal.
Stop being facetious.
Okay.
On a more serious note, are they not?
Yeah, fire should not be seen inside a stadium.
No, on a more serious note, they're not seriously in like for a bit of financial trouble. And the only way the Malaysian owners would invest was for this proviso.
Well, they're
so they
caught
have to
between
do
a rock and a red kit, aren't they? Really?
Yeah, it's true.
It's the thinking behind changing the kit.
They're away kit's blue.
Well, yeah, but supposedly blue is seen as unlucky in Asia, which is why Chelsea haven't made a big dent in the market there. But that's just some of the stuff I read around this. But that just seems
Asia's
ludicrous.
That sounds like
continent.
A racist
Everybody.
Toddy that in a pub.
Yeah, surely everyone in the biggest continent in the world can't.
Is there a point to be made that says it's not as severe as it could be because their arch rivals don't play in red? So
and Wales is their national team players in that colour.
But as a Newcastle fan,
not a consolation.
And as a Portsmouth fan, obviously Southampton playing red and white. If Portsmouth changed to red, that would be the people would go mad about that.
Yeah.
But there's nothing necessarily to sort of.
Well, if you go back far enough, I believe Newcastle used to play in red and white.
Did they? Okay. History of kits.
Yeah.
get your beards out.
Oh, eh. The Asian market will love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Asia, let's go to China.
Are they in the Euros?
They're not in the Euros this time. But Shanghai Shenhua, who obviously have Nicholas Anelka playing up front for them, had a new strike partner.
Mm.
Zhu Jun, who's the owner of the team, played himself up front with Nicholas Anelka in a friendly.
Bald. Well, at least it was a friendly, I guess.
Yeah.
And he had Nick Anelka with him. Well, I want some chances.
Yeah. He's 45.
Is it? Okay.
45.
Right.
And apparently missed some good chances, according to the reports. Sergio Batista is in charge of the team now.
Oh, the big Argentinian.
After Jean Tigana was sacked.
And Anelka was taken over some of the coaching role, wasn't he?
He did, I do quite like this. Many are still asking whether Didier Drogba will be going to the Shanghai side.
Go to Marseille, Didier.
And Jun didn't comment too much on the issue, but he only just said, "This is a good question, but I won't tell you today." And off he tiptoed, I imagine.
Yeah.
Into a secret door.
And as he closed, he sort of looked at him going,
Oh, an owner playing himself up front.
Yeah, that's what we like.
We want more of that. Yeah. Not in this country, though. Oh, dear. Right, as we're into the Euros now, we're not going to do a profile course, and there'll be no going for gold either.
Chaining up the doors.
So before we go, let's have an email.
I've got an email.
Oh.
Yeah. Dear Ramblers.
Yes.
Enjoyed your nostalgic profile of Euro 96, even though I still haven't recovered from that semi-final defeat. I don't think any of us have. At the moment, it's hard to believe we'll ever have a better chance to win a major tournament. Anyway, was curious to be reminded recently that England did not make a single substitution in the entire 120 minutes of the game against Germany. Would be interested to know if this has happened in a major match since. I don't know, but I'm sure people, if they do, will email or tweet in. Germany made all three substitutes, two of whom, Hassler and Strunz, both scored in a shootout. In retrospect, would Terry Venables have been well advised to bring on attacking players like Fowler, Ferdinand and Barmby in the last minute of extra time so that the likes of Southgate didn't have to take a penalty? Thoughts? That's from Simon Wood.
Yeah, absolutely.
He definitely made some substitutions in the game against Holland.
Mm.
So it's strange that he didn't make it.
And against Spain as well.
Yeah. Maybe had a bet on it.
Yeah, it's true.
But like
I stressed though, I think his five takers were on the field.
The takers that got through against Spain.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they were so confident that David Seaman was going to save a penalty that they wouldn't need
a
sudden death.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was going to get lobbed.
So as you can see, we're still not over it either.
No. We don't know. We will never know, but we will always keep thinking about it.
Joe Hart and goal this time.
Yeah, exactly. We'll fancy it. Yeah. We're not, obviously, cause as Marcus said, we're not doing going for gold or profile, so get your emails and tweets in throughout the tournament, and we'll try and get through as many as we can.
Yes.
Fill our boots.
It's at Football Ramble and show at thefootballramble.com.
Indeed. And before we go, we'll also tell you the website is thefootballramble.com, a new website.
Yeah, it's on our shiny new internet this week. We've got Euro predictions from many friends of the Ramble, the Retro Ramble, which features the aforementioned friends of the Ramble looking back over their favourite games from the Euros. There's Alex Hess defending Jordan Henderson, as we were talking about earlier. Our resident Polish Wunderblogger, Michał Zakodny, giving the lowdown on the Polish team and their preparations. And elsewhere, Pete shows you how you can make alcoholic beverages using an array of household items. There's a forum, the mailbag, the shop, the Hall of Fame, all kinds of lovely things. Go over there.
And we'll get a photo of Pete's two pianos on there.
Yeah, when they arrive, yeah.
It's like four puffs and a piano. Pete and two piano. And we've also got a weekly cartoon now and a mailbag where you can email in with all your stories.
There's far more blogs than that as well.
Loads of stuff on there. There's a lot of internet.
It's the best website we've got.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jim, there's been a lot of websites knocking about that I've seen on the internet, but I reckon it's probably the best one.
I mean, when we float, we're going to be like, whoa, we'll be coining it in
like as many pianos as we like.
Yeah, we will be. I'm going to have the noisiest house because I'm just going to have
like, a piano each.
The floor, it's going to be like big.
Oh, class, yeah.
Our next show is Monday the 11th evening, and then we're off to Kiev on the 12th, and then we're doing shows on the 14th, 16th, and 18th. So stop fucking asking us. I'm only joking.
There we go. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
He's not.
Say goodbye, Luke.
I am.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you, Rose, next week.
Good.
That was good, Marcus. Round
of applause.
Street Money Never Sleeps pawn figure, if it did a pawn one, it would be like to breed is good.
But you don't have a porno with the sole purpose of having a baby, do you?
Yeah, I'm not. You're still going to get my
breeding is the active.
I thought that's what happened.
Children.
Like there was like the porn, like a generation of pawn babies, and then all the babies that the porn has made.
You got your heifers the wrong way around.
That's the least of my problems.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.